are incredibly talented, if not decidedly saucy, correspondents Adam Devlin in Queensland and Rachel Brunson in South Australia join Henry in Sydney to talk about, well, nothing really.
From the Southern Hemisphere, this is the Bondi Tunes Radio Network with Henry O'Donovan.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting on FM in parts of Australia and New Zealand, and we welcome our listeners around the globe. I'm Henry in Sydney. Our correspondents in Australia, two of them, Adam Devlin is in Brisbane, Queensland, and Rachel Brunson is in Adelaide, South Australia, which is her home. And we're here to talk about, well, nothing. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Welcome. Welcome, listeners. Welcome, Adam, finally. Welcome, yes. Everybody.
You know, it was us three who started this show 15 years ago, and we never had so much trouble to get on the air as we have tonight.
No, but you know what? We did it, didn't we? Here we are.
Here we are.
We did. And you know what I'm putting it down to?
What?
I'm in Queensland, and it's still 1974 here, so the technology's not quite caught up yet.
You know what? Actually, counterpoint, seriously, I've got to point out that although it's 1974 in Queensland, it is 1972 in Adelaide, and I didn't have any problem getting connected, so I have to quash your argument there. But I thought it was from your abominable weather.
No. Well, the weather's fine at the moment. It's just another stinking hot, horrible day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Story of your life, Adam Devlin.
Yeah.
You know what? I think I've got the hiccups. I actually think I've got the hiccups. I don't care. I actually don't care. Do you mind? Do the listeners mind?
Nah. I didn't hear it.
Do you know,
I haven't heard that. Haven't heard any of the listeners complain yet. So
No, we haven't heard them.
That's because I can't talk back. do you know, I was newsreader.
That's my favourite conversation.
A one-way conversation.
One way.
I was on the air as a newsreader for 10 years, and I had to do three-minute news bulletins, and I got the hiccups in the one-and-a-half-minute mark. In those days, you didn't have audio grabs. And all of a sudden, the news ended at 1.5 minutes past. Adam, you mentioned the year 1974. Now, it was the year 1974 that ABBA won the Eurovision Song Contest for Sweden. 50 years since then, to the day yesterday. How about that?
They beat Olivia, didn't they?
I don't know.
Yes, Olivia came fourth with Long Live Love. Mm.
Yeah, well, you know what? The British jury gave Sweden nil point back in 1974. Yeah. How very dare they? It was held in Brighton, you see.
Not that it mattered. Yeah.
No.
Clearly not. History is to show that.
I think ABBA can claim victory in that little battle because where are those judges? Who are those judges? Where's ABBA and who's ABBA?
Yeah,
you know what? It's funny you say that because the British jury, the guy from the British jury just went on some television station in Britain and apologized for giving Sweden nil point. He was actually the guy who, you know, the way they go to juries around the different countries, and he apologized. And I thought, who cares? Who really cares? Yeah. You know,
they won. Yeah.
They won. And 50 years on, I mean, we've always said this, Adam.
And all that guy's doing is trying to get his little bit of glory.
Of course.
He did everything he could to stop them from winning.
Exactly. How very dare the BBC let him on air? That's what I say.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And 50 years on, and, you know, the interesting thing, we've always said, Adam, that ABBA, they hit every demographic. They did back in the 70s. Grandmothers with their grandchildren, even back in the 70s. And, of course, ABBA. Their music has been in so many movies now, including Australian ones, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, a couple of Australian movies were instrumental in ABBA's resurgence in the 90s.
That's true.
Muriel's Wedding.
We had Priscilla Queen of the Desert, The Adventures of Priscilla Queen of the Desert, and
Muriel's Wedding.
The other one has now completely, it was Strictly Ballroom.
Oh, well, I thought it was it was Muriel's Wedding.
It was Muriel's Wedding. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
And it was, and of course, Mamma Mia. which started as Broadway but became a very famous movie.
There, yes, and was repeated by another movie called Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. I know, Adam, mm-hmm. you just love those movies, don't you?
It's the one thing that I absolutely despise about ABBA.
Me too. I hated them.
It's the guy's fault. They're selling out all the time, aren't they not?
Absolutely. Look, Benny and Bjorn, it's the worst thing they've done. It's the biggest abomination. The thing that really annoys me is they've taken several songs that are so special to me as an ABBA fan, and they've bastardized them by changing the lyrics to squeeze it into this stupid musical.
I was going to use the same word.
And a dumb story. The story is weak tea, man.
But Rachel, as our entertainment reporter, why does the biggest female actor in the world go into a movie like that? Meryl Streep.
I think...
Money?
I think she does like to have a sing. So maybe it was that, and also the ensemble, I mean, aside from the story and everything else being complete trash, the ensemble was pretty good. I mean, Christine Baranski, God love her. Julie Waters, God love her. I could have done without the guys. They made it.
Pierce Brosnan, he can't friggin' sing.
No, he can't. He can't sing a note. He sounds like a cat being strangled, but, I mean, a baritone. Definitely a baritone cat, but still.
But Meryl will sign on to any film where she gets to sing.
Yeah, she loves to sing.
Young filmmakers out there, if you're listening and you want Meryl Streep in your film, turn it into a musical and give her a number. She'll sign on.
Give her a number. And if she can dance, even better. She would. Yep. She loves a good dance. So, I mean, but as far as, you know, I don't want to spoil, but for anybody who hasn't seen it, but it's completely spoiled from its very inception. But I mean, bringing Cher on in the second one was just that was tokenism at its absolute worst. And why she decided to do it, I've got no idea.
I could have. Well, Cher is a massive ABBA fan. She loves ABBA. She's obsessed with ABBA.
I didn't know that.
You know, when a few years ago, ABBA released a video called ABBA The Last Video, and it was a puppet show of ABBA. And the four ABBA members make a cameo at the end of it. But Cher pops up in this thing several times just because she's in the studio. It happens to be in the studio at the same time. Mm-hmm. And, of course, as bad as she is in Mamma Mia, like, that's a crime against humanity, Cher in Mamma Mia. But it's a walk in the park. It's a joyous experience in regards to the ABBA cover album that Cher then recorded and released called Dancing Queen.
That was great.
I had one listen to it, and I my long-suffering boyfriend had to take the metal spikes out of my hands as I was about to shove them through my eardrums.
I loved it.
You know, Adam, I thought that I can't remember which song it was that Cher sang in the second, I don't know, one of the movies, Mamma Mia.
She did an appalling version of Fernando in one of them.
Yeah. Right.
So you're not happy with any of the songs she did in the movie?
No, they should all be erased.
The whole movie should be erased. Both movies should be erased. It was one of those moments in time where if you saw them, you just knew that you'd never, ever, ever get that time back, ever.
Is it fair enough to say that they brought ABBA to a new generation or not? I mean, I know those movies.
A lot of people liked them. A lot of people really liked those movies. And, I mean, I know my daughter who's, let's face it, she's a terrible benchmark for what music is good. She likes Bieber, for goodness sakes. But
isn't she getting a bit too old for that, Rach?
Oh, no, Justin? She's never too old for Bieber. No, she'll forever be in love with Bieber. But she likes, you know, all sorts of, mostly people I've never heard of now, of course, because I'm old and she's not. But, I mean, you know, she loved Mamma Mia. She loved both of them. She really enjoyed it. And she wasn't particularly familiar with ABBA. Even though I'm her mother, she wasn't particularly familiar. And now she's, you know, she's all about the Dancing Queen. She's all over ABBA now.
And I mean, ABBA's resurgence in America I mean, they were never a chart topper in America as such. They had a couple of hits. They had probably half a dozen hits in America or so. But they would have faded into oblivion in America if it had not been for Mamma Mia.
And also, it's worth mentioning that their newest album is what, number two in America?
No, it went to number one in America.
Oh, yeah. Really? Isn't that amazing? Yeah. After decades and decades.
And it garnered them their very first Grammy Awards, Grammy nominations.
They got
nominated for the first time.
It's quite amazing.
They should have won it. They were robbed.
Okay.
And that album, by the way, Voyage,
yes.
After 40 years, they returned with the album Voyage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, look, there were two songs on it that I thought shouldn't have been there.
Mm-hmm.
One was Little Things, which was a Christmas single.
Mm-hmm.
That had no a great song, great little Christmas single, but it should have just been a standalone Christmas single. It had no right being on that album.
Yeah.
And the other one was Like an Ocean, which was a song that they started recording in 1978. And the girls finished their vocals in 1978, but the guys never finished producing the music. And so they finished producing the music and put it on this album as well. It doesn't fit on the album. It doesn't sound right. It should have been the B-side to Little Things, the Christmas single, and they should have put two different songs onto Voyage. If they had done that, Voyage would have been one of their finest albums. It's still in their top, in my opinion, still in their top five albums.
Have a good night. Sorry, that's my food.
That's okay. Now, if you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International. I'm talking with Adam Devlin in Brisbane and Rach Brunson in Adelaide. We're going to move away from ABBA because otherwise our whole hour will be taken up. I know. Now, listen, I've got to tell you something that I think is funny. I was reading an online dating, a story about online dating. British tabloid Rag I was reading. Yes, I do read them. It's fun. And this guy asks a girl if she could bark for him when they're in a restaurant. Now, Rach, this reminds me of when Harry met Sally.
Yeah.
You made a woman meow.
I am the dog.
And I thought, oh, God, you know, the three of us were all in very stable relationships. Imagine having to do the online dating thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Would you do it?
Absolutely not.
No, I'd rather stay here in my house where it's safe. And the only barking I hear is from my dog. I have no interest in doing that at all. I'm glad I was out and about and dating back in the day when you just met people in regular places face to face and didn't have to deal with the how's a nice way to put this without us breaking rules, didn't have to deal with pictures of men's bits being sent to you yes. as a way of courting.
But do you feel sorry?
Try going onto a gay site, Rachel. That's really like.
Yeah. Nah. Oh. Nah.
That, oh dear.
I've heard things. It's like there. It's bad.
Yeah.
Have you done it, Adam? For fun?
I know people, I've seen other people's, when they've been on it, I've never been on one myself, but I've been with people where they've been on it and they've shown me just, you know, profile pictures of people which is basically pornography.
Yeah.
And I'm no prude, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm all for a bit of titillation here.
Well, we know this. Sure. We've known this for many years. but, you know, I look at the likes.
But a little mystery's good.
Yeah.
keep it a surprise for later, like the third or fourth date.
Our other correspondent in Australia is Melissa Grima in Melbourne, and she is in her I'm on drugs, so legal ones, by the
way. Me too, but it's all good.
Yeah. Now, she's in her mid to late 40s, and she is doing online dating. Do you feel sorry? I don't mean that in a patronizing way, but do you feel sorry for the younger generation? I'm not saying that she's that much younger than us. Well, she is that much younger than me. But do you feel sorry for people who have to do this? Or do you just have no remorse whatsoever?
No, none, because there is a way to meet people.
Yeah, it's called a pub, right? It's called a pub.
Yeah, well, it's called a pub. It's also called, you know, meeting through fence.
Having a social life.
Yeah, it's called going outside. It's called many, many things. And, I mean, you know, put what label you want, but there's a way to meet people and potentially find a partner without having to resort to apps and all that sort of nonsense. I mean, I don't, you know, if that's what floats your boat, if that's what, you know, if that's the way you feel comfortable doing it, then go for it. Adam, but for me, no.
Adam, I'm afraid.
I have a very, very funny story I'd like to share. A very brief story.
Please do.
I was with a friend of mine a little while ago, and he was getting pinged on one of these apps. And all of a sudden he went, "Oh my God." And we went, "What?" And he went, "Somebody just sent me their dick pic."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was his dick.
Oh no, it had been.
So he'd sent his dick pic to someone.
Copied. Oh my and
it's
God. Just,
and it's now being handed around.
So to speak.
He must have been so well endowed.
Would you be proud, or would you be embarrassed? I'd be proud if that were me, because if it's, you know, it's clearly worth a copy.
And if it's just that and they can't tell who it is, so hey.
Yeah, hey,
but what I don't understand, what I don't get is, so okay, so you send this dick pic that you're claiming is you, but it's clearly not you, to someone. They then go, yes, that I like. Let's catch up.
Yeah,
What's the conversation you have when you meet up and you show them?
It's the same thing with profile pictures on these dating apps. Because, you know, the truth is going to come out, isn't it?
That's well, literally out of the pants, and it's just false advertising.
But that's right, false advertising. Get them on that, Adam. Yeah. You know, on the upside to this dating app thing, you know, a mutual friend of ours, Phil. Did do online dating, and he met his wife. And
I've known people who have met their spouse through online dating as well. So this can
and does work.
Yeah, it's just I did a special. Actually, I don't know if you were involved, Adam, but I know you were, H, on internet dating about 7 years ago, and I actually interviewed Phil. And it was very interesting because she already had a child, and then they had and they had two together. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah.
Isn't there good? You see, the people who are lonely out there, males and females and young, they would see stories like this and think, "Oh, that can happen to me." So in a way, you know,
the issue. The thing is, you have to sift through all of the people who are just after an anonymous hookup and find the ones that are actually wanting a relationship.
I think it's a lot to do with your intention going in.
Yes.
And you know, what it is that you're looking for. And if you're – I mean, I know Phil a little bit, but –
Of course, you've met him, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah. There's a certain articulation. There's an intelligence behind what his profile would probably be saying, you know, all the right things. Not just, "Hey babe, check me out," you know, flash of said dick pic and on it goes. But I think in terms of weeding out, if you're serious about finding a partner, as his wife was, you would see that and say, "Okay, there's a genuine fella. I'll go on a couple of dates and see if that holds to be true." And of course, in his case, it did. And he's an honest guy anyway. I don't think he's capable of making up a false profile.
Yeah. It's how you display yourself, I guess, online.
Yeah, and the intent that you're going in. I mean, you know, if you're after a hookup, you're not going to, you know, bother with the
just get on Tinder.
You're looking for the person who's also after a hookup. You're certainly not after somebody who's got children and wants a relationship. I mean, that's a pass right there. So, as we would sort of, you know, if it were us, if we were to sort of look at profiles and look at somebody who was, you know, earnest and had taken the time to create, you know, an interesting profile with actual information and a clear intent of what they were after, we would see the other kind of profile and just skip straight past it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's the intent. I think it can work. I mean, I went to one of the most lovely weddings I've ever been to was for a couple who met in the olden days of RSVP, when you had to buy men had to buy tokens. Women could join for free, but men had to buy tokens. And this gentleman spent his last token on this one woman, and they're married. I went to their wedding in 2009, and they're still married today and happy as anything can be. And that's lovely end to that story. So it can work, depending on your intent.
Rest assured, though, that if I ever allow the long-suffering boyfriend to sober up enough to leave me...
that'll never happen. Oh. He can't be bothered to pack. Rob will never leave me. He can't be bothered to pack.
Yes, it's too hard. It's too hard. Adam, what are you saying?
You know, I'll never... If I can't find another partner, not that I ever want another partner, this is my last relationship. Yeah. But, if I'm ever in that situation, and I hope I'm not, but if I'm ever in that situation, I certainly don't think I'll be logging on to one of these apps.
No, me neither. You know I'll make you feel a
bottle, I'll bring you love. I look at you and I see what I've been looking for. Now it's very
let's move on again. Adam Devlin is in Brisbane. Rachel Brunson is in Adelaide. I'm Henry in Sydney. And I want to actually just talk for a minute about the price of food. The supermarkets in Australia and the big players, and we know who they are. They're Coles and Woolworths, to a lesser extent Aldi, although I think they're not as bad as the big players. There's a new... the government in Australia, I'm not sure if it's federal, Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, whether it's federal or state, but they're putting pressure on the two or three big players to be accountable.
It's federal.
What do you know
about this? It is the federal government. There's been a voluntary code of practice in the supermarket industry for some time. And because it's voluntary, no one's following it.
Yeah.
isn't it run by the supermarkets themselves? Or is it independent? Yep. I don't know.
No, it's run by the supermarkets.
Okay, so, well, that's bullshit, isn't it?
Overseen by government. But, you know, they've got this code of conduct, which is voluntary. And, of course,
toothless
it's not being followed. So,
toothless yep. tiger, yeah.
So the government ran a review of this, and they have now come out with a mandatory code of conduct, which will pass through government, and it will basically, well, what it's meant to do is ensure that the triopoly, which is essentially Coles, Woolworths and Aldi, you can throw IGA in there a bit if you want to make sure that these players who hold about 60% of the market aren't price gouging,
mm-hmm.
and they're not using their market power to artificially increase prices. So that's the intent is to make sure that we're not being ripped off.
And stuff, yeah?
Sorry, Rachel.
Sorry, what was
and that? To pillage our farming industry, with particularly with and dairy and so forth, with they're pushing dairy farmers out of the market.
Well,
because what's been happening
milk
is
and,
yeah, the supermarkets are going to the producers, farmers, and saying we can't afford to pay you what you want, so they're driving down the amount of money they're giving to the farmers
mm-hmm.
at the very same time as they're increasing the prices they're charging in the supermarket, which is the very definition of price gouging.
They're screwing people on both sides, aren't they? I mean, that's the bottom line. And they're making
Absolutely.
Billions of profit. And apparently, according to this, you know, I hope it's legislation that the federal government are bringing into power, they can be actually find $1 billion or more, and thank God something is getting done by this this federal Labor government. It's taken so long.
The trouble is, and this is often the case with government, it doesn't go far enough. What it should have in it is, if you break this code of conduct, Coles, Woolworths, Aldi, or IGA, if you break this code of conduct, we will break your conglomerate up and make you sell off so that you only have about 10% of the market, not 40%. That's what it should have, but it doesn't.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And do you guys, I mean, we are suffering from this, you know, I mean, you know, it's easy for me to say that because I don't have children, you know, but people are suffering. And, you know, you just go down to the supermarket and try and buy some meat. I know that wouldn't be your case, Adam, because you're a vegetarian. But it really is affecting everybody. I mean, how do you guys feel about this? Is this affecting you?
Well, Robbie likes a good bolognese because he's Italian, and that's all. And not to say, you know, non-Italians don't like bolognese. Of course they do. But
I just made some the other day.
See, it's delicious. And 500 grams of lean beef mince is $9 at Woolworths.
Is that a lot? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a lot. And, you know, it's crazy. But ever since, I think it really started to show its ugly face during COVID.
And they've taken that opportunity to rip money out of the farmers and rip money out of us.
Mm-hmm.
Adam, as a vegetarian, is this easier for you or not?
No.
Vegetable
prices have gone up ridiculously in the last sort of 2 years. You know, often by more than 50%.
What concerns me is that people are, and this is segueing into another subject, what concerns me is that people are buying fast food because it's friggin' cheaper than going to the supermarket and getting fresh food. Now, the World Health Organization have issued or reissued a report from an independent study saying that processed food is killing more people in the developed world, that is, than tobacco. I mean, you know, no one can justify what tobacco is doing to people. It's certainly not a good thing. But if the World Health Organization says that it's actually killing more people than tobacco. This is processed food. You have to wonder, don't you?
Well, it's interesting.
You're eating while you're talking to us, Rachel, aren't you?
And fast food. I'm eating fast food. But I recall when the movie Super Size Me came out.
Oh, yes.
They were talking about how people in lower socioeconomic
demographics.
Were buying, it was cheaper for them to buy, four cheeseburgers and a small thing of fries to feed their kids than it was to buy meat and vegetables and make a meal for them. And you can understand why they did it, because they had very limited amount of money, and that was the thing that they could at least get some food into their child, albeit terrible food, but they wouldn't go to bed hungry, even though they couldn't afford vegetables and meat and so forth and so on.
And also,
and it was deliberately set up that way.
Yeah, and this fast food is satisfying for longer because it is so processed, it takes a lot longer for your body to break it down.
Mm.
So, you know, you can go to McDonald's or Hungry Jack's or Burger King, one of those chains, and you know, feed your children for a little bit of money and know that that's going to last them all night. They'll go to bed with a full belly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you cook a big bowl, if you take that same amount of money and went to the supermarket and bought a big bowl of different vegetables, went home, cooked the veggies and served them up a plate of vegetables, you know, an hour after they eat that, they're going to be hungry again.
That's right. And that's when you give them, you know, a Twinkie or you know, some sort of cheap snack because, you know, again, you know, but they, and I'm a sort of big, big and not big. I like the American system where they have a cafeteria situation at lunch. So they could have, you know, whatever they wanted, and parents would give them a little bit of money to have lunch. But the lunches they were serving were just as much garbage as the fast food that their parents were giving them, until they came along with, you know, like Jamie Oliver's program of healthy lunches. But also, if you're a kid from a poorer community, or if you're destined by means testing to have a little bit of money, you would get a coupon for a free lunch. And that in itself is a very smart system, which we don't possess.
It seems to me quite disingenuous when the likes of Burger King or Hungry Jack's, I'm not even going to go into the difference in those organizations here in Australia because they seem the same to me, is that they pretend to have, well, they do have these healthy kind of salad-y things going on in their restaurants. And I find it kind of funny because people still buy a Big Mac instead, you know what I mean? But this is on market. This is marketing stuff.
People buy I love it when people buy a Big Mac, a large fries, a sundae, and then to top it all off, a Diet Coke. I mean, just buy the Coke, man. It's probably better for you than Diet Coke. Diet Coke's full of all sorts of rubbish.
Adam, does McDonald's do stuff for you, vegetarian types?
Salads. No, not really. No.
Salads, but there's it's a bit of lettuce, two tomatoes, and then it's so much drowned in salad dressing.
But don't they also have chicken in their salads? Like, can you just get a straight salad without meat in it at McDonald's? I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure you can ask. They call it a grill. So you can order something special, anything you want. You can order something special off their menu. You can say, and now it's getting even more hilarious, you can take away the bun from a burger and ask for lettuce instead of the bun, which I know is becoming a bit of a trendy thing.
Is there such a thing as fast food for vegetarians, Adam? Because
absolutely. And it's a huge market outside of Australia.
You know, but not in Australia.
You know, Hungry Jack's in this country, which is also Burger King.
Yeah, what is that about? I mean, that confuses the hell out of me.
When Burger King wanted to come to Australia, there was already a registered name of Burger King in this country, and so they had to change the name. So they came up with Hungry Jack's. A little while after that, Hungry Jack's bought out the trademark of Burger King in Australia. So we now have that situation where there's some Burger Kings and some Hungry Jacks, but they're all the same company, and all the new ones they're opening in this country are Hungry Jack's. So eventually Burger King will vanish from Australia and it'll just be Hungry Jack's.
I'm so glad that you explained that to me. It's been driving me nuts since I came to this country. I guess I could have Googled it. You know, I was in a McDonald's, and I worked at McDonald's when I was 19. As a kid, and I became what they called a swing manager. I'm not sure what that means. A kind of a half manager. Anyway, I was in the country, up country, traveling with my girlfriend in a car, and I went. I've got cancer and I'm on chemo, or at least I was at the time. And I went into a restaurant, and when you're on chemo, you need to go to the toilet now, right? And I always depended on McDonald's because they're clean. They've got toilets that are clean, all that sort of thing. So I went into a McDonald's and I went to the toilet, and there was no toilet paper. So I went to the counter and I said, would you mind putting some toilet paper? And this girl just looked at me like she was like 17 years old or maybe 12. I don't know. She just disappeared. And 10 minutes later, I'm waiting for her and I thought, this is useless. So I wrote to McDonald's, long story short, about a month ago. And I said, look, I love McDonald's. I worked at McDonald's when I was a kid. It teaches you respect for people, blah, 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 blah. And they said, well, an automated email says we'll get back to you within 48 hours. Now, 3 weeks later, they never got back to me. So I wonder, are they getting a lot of complaints on their system? Because I think that's a disgrace that they didn't respond to me, you know?
I think it's a case of, they wouldn't get a lot of complaints. They'd certainly get some complaints. But I think it's a case of you'll get an automated response when you send your complaint in saying, you know, we'll get back to you in 48 hours. The vast majority of people will then forget about it.
Yeah, but I didn't, because I wrote to them again last Sunday and said, hey, I'm not forgetting about it.
Good. Keep writing to them. Eventually they will come back to you.
And you know what? They'll send you 45,000 rolls of toilet paper, I bet you.
I'd prefer if they sent me vouchers for a year's free Maccas.
That'd be nice.
I really don't eat McDonald's that much.
You really don't respect your body, do you?
No. Well, I wouldn't be if I got a year's free of McDonald's. I mean, with the prices of vegetables and meat in supermarkets, that might be my way out.
I want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl. So they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
Good friend around.
Before we go, we've got a final subject. Now, Adam, you've been to Taiwan. You've been around Taiwan for, what, 3 weeks or something?
2 weeks. Two weeks.
And you come back to Queensland and Australia, and 4 days later, there's this massive earthquake. How did you fail, as the Australians ask?
First of all, I felt really sad and concerned for the people of Taiwan.
Sure.
And then immediately after that, I felt very safe and lucky that I'm back home.
Yeah. But were you near any of those areas?
Look, we weren't that far from the epicenter at one point, a couple of hundred Ks. But, you know, some of the damage that I've seen, it's horrific.
It's frightening. Look at those buildings have on their side. They're just leaning over, you know?
Yep. And, you know, these people, the people of Taiwan are just the most beautiful people, friendly, caring, considerate people who will do anything to go out of their way to help you. And, you know, they don't deserve this.
No.
No.
Not it's, that, you know, nature awful. Doesn't care about things like how nice you are or anything, but it's just such a wonderful country. And, you know, I just hope that they can recover from this quickly.
Yes, and you did speak to us from Taipei.
Yes.
It just seems so very sad that this happened. And, you know, a lot of people were saying on social media, lucky you, Adam. But, you know, I just feel for the people. But the thing about Taiwan is that, you know, this is the biggest in 25 years, a quarter of a century, right?
Yeah.
And since that time, they've restructured their buildings to withstand earthquakes like this. So the damage, the collateral damage and the damage to life is a lot less than it was 25 years ago, you know?
But there's still,
they did what Japan did, I think, with their engineering and their architecture. But, I mean, I was, not to take away from this story, but I was in Japan when an earthquake hit, and it was very scary. And although we were very far away from the epicenter, but we were due to go to Kobe, where the big one really hit, and we decided not to for some reason, and we were very lucky, very, very lucky. But just as well, when I was in my apartment and it hit, everything sort of just swayed like it was rubber, and there was no damage to the buildings at all. It was amazing.
Rach, talking of architectural things, do you think that the architecture of buildings has gone to the dogs now?
In places like that?
Yeah, like no. I mean everywhere. You know, what kind of building do you live in? Is it a new building or an old building? And are buildings like built to last anymore?
Well, I live in a townhouse that was built in 2020. So it's very new, very safe, all up to standard. And after COVID, everything changed after COVID. The standards and the rigmarole that builders had to go through was quite strict. And of course, the materials they were able to use, because materials were in short supply and we couldn't get certain things. So they had to make do with what they have, and what they had was probably some of the most expensive materials on the planet, because they couldn't get the rest of the stuff they would normally use. So I feel very safe in ours. And Adelaide does have a fault line all the way through it, but we haven't had a tremor here for a long time.
I didn't know you had that situation in South Australia.
Yeah, big fault line.
God.
It sits right under a major hospital.
Adam got cut off, but he's rejoined us. Adam, can you hear us okay?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's all good. Myself and Rachel are talking about how architecture may have changed, well, has changed clearly over the decades.
Absolutely. The thing that concerns me, though, with Taipei is there's a lot of very poor people living in Taipei. Mm. And when you step outside of the cities, it's villages. And I don't know how many of those buildings have been engineered to withstand earthquakes.
Older buildings for sure. In the big cities, they've restructured their buildings to withstand these earthquakes, but maybe not in the small village. I mean, that makes sense because the epicenter of this earthquake was actually in a rural coastline, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, I haven't had the chance or yet to look into that, but I just, you know, I feel for those people in out of the poor people who live in these villages who live basically a hand-to-mouth existence. Mm. You know, if their houses are destroyed, I don't know how they're going to rebuild that.
Yeah.
Mm. Certainly, I don't know how they're going to afford to rebuild it with the new engineering processes to build them to be earthquake proof.
They're going to have to rely on a lot of goodwill, a lot of like I know when the whole business in Ukraine settles down, Rob's intention is to go there and volunteer himself to survey and start rebuilding all of their ports.
That sounds dangerous to me, Rach. Craggy.
I think by the time he goes, it won't be as dangerous. But I know that they're going to need experts, and they're going to need experts who are willing to donate their time. And they're going to need and I think that's the same thing that's going to happen in Taipei as it did in Haiti, as it's happened in Turkey.
Yes. And Japan has come out and said that they are prepared to do whatever they need to do to make sure that Taiwan is safe and secure moving forward. So, and China itself have said they will also be doing an awful lot.
Well, they've got an ulterior motive, haven't they?
Isn't it amazing how the world comes together in a disaster? I always think that if we were invaded from another planet, that the Arabs and the Jews would get together, you know, and everyone would get together. Isn't it a psychological thing, this whole warfare thing?
Well, yeah, I think absolutely. It's the idea of a common enemy.
Yes. We need a common enemy. We need people to invade us from another planet. Before we go, Adam, I was just talking to Rachel about modern architecture as against old architecture, not just in the places we've been talking about, but here in Australia, I live in a house that was built in 1935. Buildings are not built to last anymore. And I'm just wondering what you're in the penthouse, I believe, you posh bugger, in Brisbane. How old is your building?
Our building was built in the early 90s.
So it's new.
Well, you wouldn't know by looking at it.
but do you think that we've gone to hell with architecture, generally
Absolutely.
Speaking?
Well, I think particularly with residential architecture in this country, we have, our apartments are getting smaller and smaller.
A bit like Japan, right?
The walls are getting thinner and thinner. Yes. The soundproofing is getting, like, you know, we've got these sounds, these smart TVs that sound like a cinema, and we're putting them into small, tiny apartments next to other tiny little apartments with no soundproofing in the walls.
I was going to ask you about the soundproofing because I was at a friend's house some months ago and I stayed overnight, and my God, paper-thin walls or what? I mean, I live in a double brick house, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because the apartments that Robbie and I were living in Elstonwick,
you've lived everywhere.
That's true. But the apartments we were living in there and in Canberra even, they were, you know, triple glazed. They were, you couldn't hear what was going on 5 feet from you in the next apartment. You just couldn't hear a thing. We had babies next door, could never hear them.
Wow.
We had our subwoofer mate going off his guts when Robbie was using it to listen to a movie, and he's also half deaf, so the volume was up a significant amount. And we checked with them to see if we were disturbing them or their babies, and they said we can't hear a thing. So we were really insulated, and it was quite good.
I'm lucky. We're very lucky in this apartment because we've got the whole top floor of the building. We don't have any neighbours on our level.
What about
and
downstairs?
Noise rises, so there's no one above us, so we're lucky.
Yeah, but noise rises.
But I know many friends who live in apartments who have that very issue of, I've got some friends here in Brisbane who live in an apartment and they can hear their neighbour go to the toilet.
Yeah,
and what about the sex? I mean, really? Do we really need to hear all that stuff?
Well, it depends how often they've swiped right on Tinder, I guess.
Okay, we must go. It's so much fun talking to you guys. It took us a hell of a lot of energy and strife to get this happening because of technical.
But we did. We made it.
We did it. Adam Devlin and Rachel Brunson, thank you so much for joining me here on Mother.
You're welcome. It's lovely. And nice to talk to you, AD.
Yes, lovely to hear your voice again, Rachel. It's been way too long and we must do this again soon.
We really must.
Oh, God.
I'll get my IT sorted in the meantime.
Yes, please do.
It's like the Waltons. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio. Okay, guys, we're out.
Yay!
We made it in the end.
While you were doing that whole interview, I ate my entire order of Hungry Jack's. Do you believe it?
Love somebody, yes I do. Love somebody, yes I do. Love somebody, yes I do. I love somebody, but I won't say who. Handsome, say he's 6 feet tall, and his picture's on my wall. Love to be his baby doll. If he kissed me, I wouldn't mind at all. I love somebody, yes I do. Love somebody, yes I do. Love somebody, yes I do. Love somebody, but I won't say who. Don't know why she acts so shy. She ought to know I wouldn't dream of even hurting a fly. Hope she doesn't pass me by, 'cause if she did, I'd die. I know I'd die. I love somebody, yes I do.
Love somebody, yes I do.
Love somebody, yes I do.
Love somebody, but I won't say who.
He's big and strong. Would you like to feel my muscle? Bold and gay. I never once lost a tussle. At the moment, he's not very far away. Why don't you say who? Say already. I'd want to marry him today. But you don't say who. That I cannot do. Happen to be me. Possibility. Won't you tell me who you love? Love somebody. Tell me true. Yes, I do. Yes, you do. Love somebody. I do too. And I do. Maybe me. Love somebody. I hope it's me. Yes, I do. Love somebody, but I won't tell who. Come on and confess. Why don't you try and guess? Do tell, let's tell.
You promise not to breathe a word?
Doris, don't be absurd.
Strictly on train, ooh.
We too.
Well,
confidentially.
Between you and me.
Confidentially, I love
somebody.
I've got news for you.
Love somebody.
I feel that way too.
Love somebody.
Glad it's true.
That somebody that I love is you.
Bondi Tunes International, playing all over the planet now. Bongerical.
007, licensed to sing. The 1969 Bond film on Her Majesty's Secret Service provided a temporary break for Sean Connery, with George Lazenby making his one appearance as 007. And the song provided a temporary break from the tradition of having a title song over the opening credits. In fact, it wasn't even a title song. It arose out of the last words of that year's Bond entry on Her Majesty's Secret Service, uttered by Bond after his wife's death, in both the novel and the film. Composed by John Barry with lyrics by Hal David, it was a secondary musical theme, the title theme being the instrumental On Her Majesty's Secret Service, also composed by Barry. Louis Armstrong, although ill at the time, was chosen by Barry to record the song because he felt he could deliver the title line with irony. The song was not registered in the music rating charts in the UK when first released, only becoming well-known 25 years later as part of a Guinness commercial after the Irish alternative rock band My Bloody Valentine chose to cover it for charity. Armstrong's version was then re-released and reached number 3 in the UK singles chart. When asked once for his favourite Bond composition, John Barry cited both We Have All the Time in the World and Goldfinger. Goldfinger because it perfected the Bond sound, and We Have All the Time in the World because he considered it the finest piece of music he had written for a Bond movie, and because of the pleasure of working with Louis Armstrong.
We have all the time in the world, time enough for life to unfold all the precious things love has in store. We have all the love in the world. If that's all we have, you will find we need nothing more. Every step of the way will find us with the cares of the world far behind. We have all the time in the world just for love, nothing more, nothing less, only love. Only love.
Henry O'Donovan.